You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up tonight after 7, it's Latino USA. On tonight's episode, what you don't expect when you're expecting. Latino USA shares some of the unexpected twists and turns that can go along with pregnancy. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
Now, President Trump announced yesterday that he plans to cut spending on many federal government programs and shift billions more in funding to the armed forces.
The president proposed an increase of military spending by $54 billion. The White House says this would increase the defense budget by 10%. This is the first indication of spending priorities for the new administration. President Trump will give a speech tonight to a joint session of Congress, and he'll submit his budget to Congress next month.
Kevin Barron has been following this issue. He joins us now to talk about the proposal to increase military spending. He's executive director for Defense One. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Well, you know, you hear a number, an increase in the budget, but federal budgets work kind of weird. President Obama had been expected to increase the defense budget, as I understand it, just by not this much. Can you put this $54 billion number into context for us?
Well, the context is there is no context. This is a number ahead of a plan, ahead of a policy. It does have some history. It comes from, you know, some budgeteering by a conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation. At the same time, some reporters have already dug up that Obama, back in 2012, in a five-year plan, had proposed a number almost exactly the same for this year. So there's a little bit of history to it, but mostly it's from Donald Trump on the campaign trail saying he's going to increase the defense budget. He's going to buy a lot more ships and planes and tanks, expand the size of the force, and they need money to do that. So this is their first offering. It's money, they said, directly they're going to take from non-defense programs and send it to the Pentagon. But it comes ahead of the Pentagon's own internal review. General Mattis, Secretary Mattis now, is supposed to have a chance to shape a new national security strategy. And from that, the service chiefs of the Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines are supposed to then give their request for how much they want, how many troops. Instead, they just got a whole lot of cash. If this goes through Congress.
The premise that kind of set this up was the idea that the military has been gutted over the last 8 years. That was something that Donald Trump had been saying for quite a while now. Can you talk about the current state of the military budget and where the military is?
So, yeah, the budget's about $560 billion or $580 billion if you add the war money to it. You know, the characterization of the military as gutted or decimated, it really depends on who you ask and what your perspective is. So on the one hand, you have the Secretary of Defense all year long last year on every single campaign or every single speech saying, this is the greatest fighting force the world has ever known. We reporters heard him say that ad nauseum. Well, you can't have the world's greatest fighting force and also be decimated and unable to fight and have three-quarters of your fighter aircraft grounded for maintenance and only two brigades available for immediate deployment, which are the statistics we started to hear from the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So what we had a campaign where Donald Trump consistently said that the military was gutted, which is frankly not what you hear from inside the military. But then we got to when he becomes elected, he gets in office, and we have this window where all of the Joint Chiefs are now putting forth statements and speeches and op-eds, including at Defense One, laying out exactly what they want. All of them saying, we need more troops, we need more airmen, we need more sailors, we need more ships, we need more of everything, because the strategy that has been laid upon us by the previous administration and from what Donald Trump is saying he wants to do is just so much more than we are able to do right now. So you have the U.S. military is, you know, by far the biggest and strongest and most powerful. They have the most amazing equipment known to the history of the world. They've got the best fighters in the history of the world, but they're being asked to do so much and with a lot of equipment that, frankly, is a bit outdated.
Let's give a listen to President Trump at a White House meeting yesterday with the nation's governors.
We must ensure that our courageous service men and women have the tools they need to deter war, and when called upon to fight in our name, only do one thing, win. We have to win. We have to start winning wars again. I have to say, when I was young in high school and college, everybody used to say, we never lost a war. We never lost a war. You remember. Some of you are right there with me, and you remember, we never lost a war. America never lost.
And now we never win a war. We never win. And we don't fight to win. We don't fight to win. So we either got to win or don't fight it at all.
So apart from wanting to win wars in the future, what do we know about President Trump's military priorities, as you were saying, what he hopes to accomplish with the U.S. military in the future?
Well, let's stick with what he just said right there, this idea of winning. I mean, this is fascinating to me. I've covered the Pentagon for a decade, and the last time generals talked about winning is about a decade old. It's just not the context by which the military or any serious national security professional approaches terrorism and the global problem of terrorism and the terrorist groups that are being fought. The military top leaders in the last month have come out publicly here in Washington at their bases in writings saying that they want a plan that is more than just the military, that's really whole of government, and that's not new. That's how we've been talking about, you know, these wars all the way to the beginning of the Iraq War and the insurgency 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So they want much more than just a more robust military fighting ISIS harder to take them out. At the same time, the ISIS war alone has completely changed in the last 6 to 9 months. You know, Iraq is almost completely retaken. Mosul is almost about to fall. Syria has a way to go still. But it's a different kind of war month to month to month. So the idea right now, you've got Trump, who just went down to Tampa to talk to the generals at Central Command and Special Operations Command. He asked them, what does winning look like? He's interested in winning. And they gave him that answer that, well, it's, you know, there's a long project, and we want governance on the backside of fighting, or else what are we fighting for? Because we don't want to hold any territory. That's not what the military is for. But he asked about winning, and he was told that. Then he was, you know, last week, General Dunford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, was in D.C. at the Brookings Institute and said that this new counter-ISIS plan they're about to present, it's way more than just the military. It's a whole-of-government approach. And yet, yesterday, Trump came out with a budget that shifts money out of the State Department, out of development and diplomacy, puts more money on the military. So he's clearly focused on this campaign idea of, we're going to build up the military, and I want a military win, and I want it fast. But that's not what I'm hearing from the generals.
Yeah, you mentioned cuts, along with this increase in defense spending, cuts to State Department budgets, cuts to foreign aid. What have we been hearing from past generals and current leaders, for that matter, about the impact of those kind of cuts?
Well, everyone's against it, mostly, and that's not new. That's decades old. I mean, I've been in Washington since 1998, and since the day I stepped foot here, I've heard national security leaders in uniform talk about how they want a bigger State Department and a bigger development, bigger diplomacy and development. A big moment for this several years ago was when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, Robert Gates was the Secretary of Defense, Obama was in the White House, and the Democrats controlled Congress. And at the time, you had Gates and Clinton, who became fast friends in the war against terrorism in Afghanistan and Iraq. And Gates was begging Washington for more money for the State Department. He had offered to mobilize the National Guard in civilian uniforms to take over jobs like building, you know, schools and wells and agricultural work. It wasn't feasible, but it was that urgent for them. And even with a Democratic White House and a Democratic Congress and all those other supporters, it went nowhere. And there was no giant increase of State Department. There was no robust flooding of the world with American diplomats and ideas like there was back in the Cold War. So the idea that anything like that's going to happen now with Trump and with Republicans in charge is fallacy. Instead, it is still just focused on the military. The difference is that plenty of Republicans in Congress who've been leaders of national security, they understand counterterrorism and counterinsurgency, and they also view this as a long war, a long battle that the United States is in, and they understand the military needs help outside of the military. The question is, does Trump, and will Trump and his inner sanctum of civilian policy advisors that he brought in, guys like Steve Bannon and Kushner and the rest, are they going to listen? Who's he going to listen to? Is he going to listen to them and himself, or is he going to listen to General Votel, General Tony Thomas from Special Ops Command, General Dunford, General Mattis, all of these people who are going to be pushing for really a lot more of the same, not a whole lot of things different?
One Republican senator who's pushed back against a lot of what Donald Trump has done is Senator John McCain. Now, he's critical of this increase for not being big enough. He says, hey, it's a dangerous world. We have a lot we need to do with the military. We need even more money. Do you think that's going to be a common sentiment, or is that something unique to Senator McCain?
Oh, I think it's a very common sentiment that, far more than this is needed. if the United States is going to do what it says it wants to do. Again, start with the strategy for the world. It's supposed to come from the White House first, a national security strategy. Then the Pentagon gets the chance to come up with the defense side of it. Then, again, the Joint Chiefs say, okay, here's what we need in each of our services. Then you can have a military that is built and equipped and staffed to do what is asked of it. That changes year to year to year, and the generals are the first to say that we're 100% wrong at planning the future all the time. So in the last couple of years, what have been the big changes, for example? Well, Putin moving into Crimea, the need to move troops and tanks back in force to the Eastern Europe, keeping track of the Chinese and these islands in the South China Sea. These are all demands the military did not have 2 years ago. That can't be brought out of thin air. They take a lot of time to build up. The Marines is a good example. The Marines have wanted to add 20 or 40,000 more Marines to their ranks, and they're probably going to get that money and that authorization this year, but it's going to take several years to build up to that level. And then you're starting at the bottom at you know, privates, so at entry level, you know, forces. Not you don't recruit sergeants, as they say. So there's a long way to go, and it all has to come from the civilian White House and their vision of the world and how much the United States is going to be a leader abroad in national security and global security. How much the United States military is going to be used to carry that out, to fight terrorism across the Middle East and Africa, to check down Russia, to have submarines and space and cyber, every domain. And that's where it gets very confusing. And frankly, nobody knows yet, because Trump has been all over the map with his rhetoric. Now it's time to, put your money where your mouth is. And the next 3 to 6 months, I think, are going to be very telling of what this White House's priorities are as a governing White House and as a president in office, not a campaigner on the trail.
We're talking to Kevin Barron from Defense One, looking at President Trump's proposal to increase military spending by $54 billion in his federal budget proposal.
And we're taking your calls now at 800-642-1234. What do you think about President Trump's proposal to increase defense spending? What about the cuts to other federal agencies and programs? How would you like to see military policy change in the United States? And what would you like to see the increase in funding go toward in the military? Call now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're picking up our discussion now about President Trump's proposal to increase military spending by $54 billion in his federal budget.
We're talking to Kevin Barron, Executive Director for Defense One, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Should we be making substantial increases in military spending in the federal budget? What do you think of the role of the U.S. military in the world? What do you think about cutting things like State Department budgets, foreign aid budgets, to help pay for these increases in military spending? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Kevin, let's talk about the politics of this a little bit. Sure. Someone in Congress who's maybe on the fence on this might say, some of this is going toward a base in my district or a military contractor in my district. It looks a little more attractive then.
Yeah, it does. I think the base argument has a little bit more weight than contracting unless you have a major plant. A lot of folks will mention, for example, when the F-35, I think, has a part made in every state in the union practically, and that's on purpose. And every member, it's designed that way, so it's very hard to kill the program if you're in Congress. I think a little bit of that is old school thinking. More important is this idea of closing bases that saves money. It's something the Pentagon has proposed almost every year for the past about 6 years, I think. And it goes nowhere in Congress. The argument from some is that it actually costs more money in the short term to close bases before you actually see any of the benefits. And frankly, the members who were in had clout on the right committees just weren't going to go for it. So I think I don't know that how much the monetary benefit to individual districts is a real motivator for members to approve or or not this budget. I think the bigger concern is you got to go very high to the 40,000 foot level. This country is still in a very long-term fight about whether or not to have bigger government or smaller government, tax and spend, the fight over the debt, the fight over the Budget Control Act and sequester and spending and the ceiling, the purpose of government. I mean, that's the fundamental fight in Washington right now. That's what Pelosi and McConnell are dealing with. Now, at the national security level, we're talking about should the budget be $560 billion or $600 billion or $650 billion. It really doesn't matter. It's chump change compared to the entire federal budget. And it also has zero political clout with those the partisan policy leaders in the House and Senate. I mean, for 3 years now, we've heard these national security leaders like McCain on the right and left begging their political bosses to not let sequester happen, don't pass these spending caps, it's bad for national security, and they've been completely ignored. Politics has ruled the day.
Let's go back to our callers now. We've got Julie with us in Price County. Julie, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that I would support an increase in the military spending if it was for health services and mental health care for our servicemen. I just don't think we need to build more ships and bombs and go that route. But the other thing I wanted to comment on was that Trump is asking NATO, our NATO partners, to pick up the slack around the world as far as where the United States has been supporting military operations and things like that. So if NATO is supposed to pick up the slack, what is the point in increasing our military?
Julie, thanks for the call. A lot to tackle there. Kevin, let's start with some of this money would be used for more ships and equipment, which Julie wasn't wild about. But any thought that some of this might go toward health care, mental health services for current and former service members?
Yes, but I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. Don't think of it as a zero-sum game. If a dollar has to go to a ship or it has to go to a service for troops and families, it just doesn't work that way. The Pentagon has spent a lot of time and effort in the last few years to vastly improve its services, especially mental health, to fight suicide among the ranks, to help out with PTS and the effects of the wars that have been going on. And that's a multi-decade type of concern that they're going to have. I mean, I think there are far more World War II veterans that have PTS that are being seen for issue than there are Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. So anyone who fought in those wars has issues now for the rest of their lives, if you think about it that way. What's changed is instead of 150,000 troops on multiple deployments in Iraq, we have 5,000 in Iraq. But they're special operators, and they go multiple deployments, and almost all of them are in the thick of the fight. These aren't logistics guys on the back lines. So you have a different group of people. Women is a good example. Women being open, or the ranks opening up to more women in combat, is going to mean that there are going to be very specific issues for women's mental health that haven't had to be dealt with at scale as they were before. So I think there is a lot of money. There's a lot of effort to take care of the troops. It could always be done better, but that's there. That's not going to take. I don't think those are things that take away from equipment from weapons.
And Julie also mentioned NATO, the idea from the Trump administration being we're going to get our NATO partners to pay more for defense. That'll allow us, Julie would think, to spend less.
Right. Well, but if they don't spend more, then you got to spend more yourself, right? And frankly, even if NATO does all spend more, meaning if every NATO country meets their pledge of 2% of their GDP, frankly, that's still not enough to pay for the type of security the world needs according to the current national security strategy, and definitely according to what Trump has been saying and some of the Republicans on the Hill who want more, like John McCain. The Navy is a good example where there are some who have said, to do everything that the United States assumes the Navy could do, you would need 900 ships in a perfect world, not 300 that we currently have. Because in a perfect world, you would have one ship deployed, another ship in dry dock or in back in the docks getting maintained and fitted up, and then another one being ready to go for the next deployment to rotate in. Well, we don't live in a perfect world, so we have 300 ships. And by the way, the reason the Navy had more than 1,000 ships back in the day was because they're not the ships of today. Today's ships are armed with incredibly more sophisticated defenses and weapon systems, and they're linked to satellite networks. It's a whole different era. So counting ships, counting planes, isn't the way to measure the effectiveness or the lethality of the military. But that's, you know, that's about all that, that the Hill and everyone likes to have. You know, this is politics. You pick your metric and you put it out there as the, you know, your reason for existing.
Talking to Kevin Barron from Defense One about President Trump's proposed defense spending increases. We go next to Tim on the line in Wausau. Tim, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
I think that it is needed. You know, we need, and McCain is probably right, but I think where a lot of the money should go is to enlisted people, the people that are going to be in the ranks and everything else. There's no incentive for those, you know, for a high school individual to even get in the military. I mean, he can go work at McDonald's and make the same amount of money.
Tim, thanks for the call. Better pay for the enlisted troops in the different services. Kevin, is there a case there?
Well, I don't know if you can make the same amount of money for McDonald's. And frankly, you're not serving your country at McDonald's necessarily, and you don't get the benefits and everything else to go with it. But the caller does have an absolute concern about, you know, the purpose of joining the military. And if you're going to expand the ranks, well, where are you going to get them from, right? And are they, and why are they joining in the first place? So there's an interesting background about how this changed the moment 9/11 happened. For many years, the military, you know, the all-volunteer force after Vietnam was consisted of people that either served because they had some sense of duty and they basically probably were from a military family or lived near a military base, like in Fayetteville at Fort Bragg or somewhere like that. Or you did it because of the quick money. It was a way out of the ghetto. It was a way out of, you know, rural America where there weren't as many jobs, or a way out of your family that you became the first person to get to college.
And I'm sorry, Kevin, I'm going to have to cut you off there. We're out of time. We've been talking, but thank you for joining us. That was Kevin Barron from Defense One looking at a proposed increase in military spending from the White House.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.